Are you ready?
Hey, think you could tell us what to do? You think you could tell us what to wear? You think that you're better? Well, you better get ready. Bow to the masses.
Welcome to Unscripted Wrestling, most controversial wrestling podcast in the world. I'm the moderator slash co-host, Daniel Hummer. I'm here with Doug and Eric.
What's up?
Tonight we're doing an episode on the great Paul Heyman. How's everybody doing?
Pretty good.
All right. Doug, you want to get the one plug out of the way?
All right. Yep. Listen to the Dirt Sheet Dudes, Anthony Boxman and Smark, every Wednesday and Friday night, 10 o'clock Eastern Time, mixer.com/dirtsheetdudes. Remember, on Friday nights, if we're still on the air at 10 o'clock, you listen to us first and you listen to them after.
Exactly.
And then, of course, every other Saturday, they have a show called the Hollywood Hangout. So give them
yes.
a listen. They are good people, even though they probably won't admit it.
Especially Boxman.
Well, Boxman won't admit he's a good person. Anthony tries to pass him off as good people. Boxman just believes in telling the truth. And God bless
you're
him
a mini
for...
me.
Huh?
You're a mini Boxman, Doug. You're a box. You're a
no,
Boxman.
Daniel's more like Boxman.
Oh.
Yeah, okay. You're more like Shahid. But. So for the, I think I can hear him coming downstairs with a shovel. But. We got Paul Heyman
the
next
week.
Yeah, he's still there.
Huh? Never
mind.
You're still here.
Next week, we will be doing the watch-along right for the anniversary. Get to that, Doug.
Okay, next week. There was a little bit of confusion as to what we were going to do for tonight's episode because originally, we thought that we were going to be down one moderator, but I was actually able to guilt trip him into doing tonight's episode. So we had a backup plan just in case we didn't do the Heyman show tonight. Obviously, we're doing the Heyman show tonight, so next week we're going to do a watch along, and we haven't done one of those in a long time. We're going to do a watch along of the February 23rd, 1990 episode of WWF's main event. It was Hulk Hogan versus the Macho King Randy Savage with Buster Douglas as the special ringside enforcer, and the Ultimate War. It was for the World Wrestling Federation title, too, by the way. And the Ultimate Warrior took on Dino Bravo, and Warrior defended his Intercontinental title. So we are going to do a watch-along of that. We're going to watch it in its entirety. It's only a 48-minute broadcast. So we're going to do that because next Sunday is the 30th anniversary of when that first aired.
Wow.
So.
30 years.
Yeah, 30
you know
years.
What, 5 years
I remember, not even four yet.
I was four.
Around that time, because I remember exactly where I was. I was actually at my grandparents' house when that happened, because the day before that event aired, mine and Daniel's sister was born.
Oh, wow.
So after a tragic event, they had to have something good happen, so that's why they aired the main event.
Jesus Christ. But, so, We got that going for next week. Sunday we're doing Wednesday Night Wars again, right?
Huh?
Yeah. NXT preview. And we'll get into AEW too.
Oh, on Sunday?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, Clint okay. said he's off work, so he'll be joining us.
All right.
And then we have SFL show on Monday.
Okay.
Paul Heyman, we're going to switch up the kind of the rhythm and flow that we usually have here. Instead of career retrospective, but instead of kind of going through and kind of recapping his whole career, we're just going to talk about him. We're going to, you know, tell stories, memories as a kid or whatever, talk about what we like about him, what we don't like about him, basically just have a conversation about Paul Heyman.
Right. All right, guys, I will be right back. I got to do something real quick.
Okay.
Jesus Christ, dude. The professionalism.
Upcoming hold.
Dude, this is going to be shit yesterday. Now he's skipping out on us. But, so, Eric, Paul Heyman, what's your first memory of Paul Heyman?
ECW. Or, when he came to WWE. Because I didn't really watch ECW when I was younger, so my first memory was probably him on commentary with JR. In the invasion.
So around 2001-ish?
Yeah. Just when ECW and WCW were getting demolished.
Yeah.
I thought
so,
at first his voice was annoying, but...
Yeah. I think a lot of people feel that about him at some point.
What was yours?
He's My first memories of Paul Heyman were actually shortly after yours, Eric. Because I remember him as a kid, because when I first started getting into wrestling, it was 2002, 2003. And I remember him as the GM of SmackDown. And he was with Brock Lesnar then, too. So... That was probably my earliest memories with him. I think he did good in that role too. He was a good bad guy even then. Interesting career. Doug, would you say Paul Heyman's a genius?
I'd say yes, he is a genius when it comes to creative ideas, and like what you know what to do as far as like you know ideas inside the wrestling business.
Yeah.
The only thing he's not a genius with is money.
No, he's not.
Yeah, and we'll get into that, but how ECW was a very niche thing. So was there really a position to where he could have made a lot of money? Was there a certain program in ECW or a certain... Get some tips, maybe, to where he could have made a profit off ECW. Or was he too far in the hole?
I think he was too far in the hole because, you know, ECW, they didn't have, you know, sponsors. They didn't have an ad sales team. They were basically, they produced
deals,
television
yeah.
out of somebody's basement.
Yeah. They didn't go to many arenas. The only arena they went to was ECW Arena, a.k.a. 2300 Arena now, in the New York ballroom. So those are the two main things
about ECW. They did travel a little bit. Not too much.
I mean, they were mainly in Eastern wrestling. I mean, I know San Francisco, but
you're trying to say East Coast.
East Coast, yeah. Thank you. Yeah, yeah. Ask a quick game for East Coast Wrestling, too.
The thing about Paul Heyman, and he was on the poll this week with some great managers. So, and that's why I think it's funny, because we put the poll up for managers, right?
Yeah.
For some
yeah.
reason, and maybe I'm wrong, but for some, and I know he's a great manager, but I don't, as the advocate for Brock Lesnar, I think he's awesome. I think he was great as the Dangerous Alliance days. To me, I always just see the guy that ran ECW, or like maybe in the general manager role or the commentator. I don't know if I would necessarily put him all-time managers, even though he was my pick. I don't know if he's up there with Jim Cornette, though, and Bobby Heenan. What are your thoughts, Doug?
I don't know if he's up there either, because I don't. He didn't necessarily manage the amount of guys that like a Jimmy Hart managed, or you know, like a Jim Cornette managed. But I think he's credited with managing one of the better stables, you know, in early WCW. A stable that
A
lot of people say, you know, and we're going to get into that, I'm sure. Because that's,
let's get into it now.
Well, the Dangerous Alliance was actually my first, the first memories I have of Paul Heyman that I can, you know, what I remember when I was a kid.
I've heard a lot about that, because that's where Stone Cold became, not Stone Cold, but still, that's where he started to make a name for himself.
That's very
small,
true.
But
He's, and I think, and you're both right, Austin did kind of come into his own. I think you got to give some credit, though, to Paul Heyman. Paul Heyman's kind of known for taking guys who maybe not everyone sees their potential, and he makes them superstars. And he sees CM Punk's a great example. Paul Heyman sees something in somebody. You know, sometimes it doesn't work out. But if you think about, who would you say, besides Punk and Lesnar, is a Paul Heyman guy? Yeah. Who would you say is a Paul Heyman guy? Maybe they don't talk about it on TV, but you just know that's a Paul Heyman guy.
RVD.
That's interesting.
Tommy Dreamer.
I've actually heard the opposite on both. I heard he used to bury Dreamer. And
probably
he got the creator.
I would almost say the Dudleys.
Shane Dudley.
The Dudleys. I'm not trying to quote another podcast, but something to wrestle with. Bruce said the Big Show was kind of a Paul Heyman guy. We got to WWE.
Yeah, and I've heard Miz credit Paul Heyman for a lot of stuff.
I mean, a lot of people do. And maybe they're not Paul Heyman guy. Maybe he just gave someone a piece of advice at some point. But to me, and I know he's a pain in the ass, but I think having a Paul Heyman in the locker room is very important. Just like having a JR around. You know, someone to talk to these younger guys. I think that's more beneficial than anything.
I agree.
So the Dangerous Alliance. When you were a kid, Doug, did you hate the Dangerous Alliance?
Pretty much, yeah. Because you know, as a kid, especially Rick Rude. You know, as a kid, you know, Rick Rude was a bad guy. So you have to hate the bad guys. And Sting was one of my favorites. So. When he, when Rude went after Sting, it's just like, all right, Rick Rude, he's not a good person. He's a jerk. So, yeah, I mean, I wasn't a fan. Like, I'm a fan of the Dangerous Alliance, you know, like now, you know, looking back. But at that time, when you're supposed to hate the heels and like the baby faces.
Right.
You know, you basically did what you're told.
Exactly.
And I think mean, that go ahead.
No, go.
And I think, like, at that time, Paulie Dangerously and the Dangerous Alliance did a good job of making people dislike him. Heyman especially.
Yeah.
I mean, I think Heyman, that's a great Heyman quality. Why don't they get enough credit? Is it because that it is sort of known around that time? Bad time in the business, you know. Financially, there wasn't a lot of fans showing up for WWF and WCW. Do you think that's why the Dangerous Alliance doesn't get its credit? Because you don't hear them talked about with legendary fashions like they should be.
Here's my thing on it. 91, or from like, we can even go further. We could say from like 90 to about like 95, maybe, you know, sometime in 96. You know, that was a time period where wrestling really wasn't, like, people liked wrestling, but it wasn't like, you know, a huge moneymaker like it was in the mid to late 80s. I personally, from like 90 to 92, or like probably even going to like maybe 91, 92, but I'll say from like 90 to 92, because it was around like early 93 when I was told I couldn't watch it anymore. That was my favorite time period in wrestling, and I remember a lot of the stuff that happened around that time.
So even though it might not be highly regarded, that was your favorite period?
Yeah. To me, at that time, I didn't care that, you know, it wasn't necessarily popular because it was popular to me.
Yeah.
Because I liked what they were doing around that time. Yeah, you know,
yeah,
I'm 5 or 6 years old. Why do I give a damn what other people think? I barely give a damn now.
Exactly. You don't know what the world is like when you're 5 years old. You're just enjoying life.
Yeah, and I'm just enjoying what I'm seeing on the TV. And with the Dangerous Alliance, yeah, I do agree that it had something to do with that period in time. But they needed something to make they felt like if they had a big or a top heel stable that they could that could get them back on track. They were looking for a different version of the Horsemen.
And I'm not denying that, and I'm not saying – what I'm saying is I think it's good. I think it's awesome. I love watching those old episodes of even – they were on Saturday night, right? Saturday night.
Yeah, they were on Saturday night. I mean, they started, like, before Eric, I'm echoing.
No, you're not.
Oh, not anymore. I was.
No.
I don't hear an echo.
All right, so anyway, even before Dangerous Alliance technically started at the end of November 91, and they had this big thing where Rude beat Sting for the U.S. title, and then Dangerously came out and said, here's my Dangerous Alliance, and he introduced all the members, which was Rick Rude, Stunning Steve Austin, Arn Anderson, Larry Zbysko, and Beautiful Bobby. And it was just – go ahead.
Arn didn't stay for that long, though, right?
No, he was in it until Dangerously left the company. It was the Zbysko.
I don't remember seeing him as much as the other guys. When I think of the Dangerous Alliance, my mind does not go to Arn Anderson. I think
he was in it.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Maybe it was Austin for me.
Well, I mean, because we know what Austin became, and we always hear that story. But my initial question was, why aren't they more talked about? Why aren't they more popular? Because I'm agreeing with you that it's a great stable. But why is it in the history books like the Four Horsemen is? But it maybe should be.
Because I really think that they're forgotten.
Yeah. And I also think because Arn was part of the Four Horsemen, he's really associated that. And Rick Rude is mainly nobody remembers him as in a stable besides the X or Nova in NWO.
But it was
no because
it was his best work. And no, and I do agree with what you're about to say, Doug. No offense, Eric. Not everybody knows Rick Rude from NWO. Not everyone knows Rick Rude from shaking his body and shit when Hogan and stuff was really blowing up. He was one of the top big carters when WWF was at its peak. That's what he's known for.
And he's also known for being managed by Bobby the Brain Heenan.
Yeah, I didn't see much of Rick Rude when he was younger, so maybe that's why I only remember him as NWO. So
that's all good, because that was one of your favorite times, right?
Yeah, 95-ish, 96. So that's when I started.
Rick Rude, definitely, we got to do an episode at some point, because he's a whole other. What's the best Rick Rude match you've ever seen, Doug? Yeah.
I don't know if it's the best, but it's one of my favorites, and it's a match between him and Ultimate Warrior at the 1989 SummerSlam.
He made Ultimate Warrior look like a million bucks.
Yeah, in that match especially. Because you figure that match went about 15, 16 minutes. And Warrior is not necessarily the kind of guy that you go 15, 16 minutes. But Rude made sure that it was a good match.
He did. Rick Rude is a legend, and he wasn't on any of our top 10 lists last week. We fucked up. Was he on somebody's top 10 list for underrated?
I don't think so.
He could easily be number one.
Yeah.
That's insane that no one thought about Rick Rude. I didn't.
And not even our bonus.
Huh. That's nuts.
We make a lot.
And so it's hard because there's so many. But Rick Rude's definitely it. At the top of that list for most underrated wrestlers. Rick Rude, his body of work. The man was fucking awesome. But back to Pauly. Is there a young manager, commentator, a young person in wrestling that could be the next Paul Heyman?
Ooh. Boy. I think Doug's going to hate me for this.
Oh, God. Say it. I know what you're about to say.
Corey Graves. Who do you think I was going to say?
Corey Graves.
I knew you were going to say Corey Graves.
I think if Corey Graves was wrestling 10 years ago, he could have been a Paul Heyman guy. I could see him as a Paul Heyman guy.
I mean, as the next Paul Heyman, like a genius in professional wrestling.
Oh, okay. Cody Rhodes?
Jesus Christ. Well, we can't do an episode without mentioning Cody Rhodes.
Now that.
We're AEW fanboys. So am I.
Yeah. How about you, Doug? Who do you think? I can't think of anybody without.
There was, if there was like a manager, commentator that.
The next could be genius, basically. It's a hard question.
It is. I can't think of any.
I can't think of anybody.
I can't really think of anybody either. The closest person I could think of would be Graves. But
and that sucks. Yeah.
But that's just because Graves just likes to stir shit.
Yeah.
How about Triple H? I know he's not a commentator, but look what he's done with NXT.
Yeah, I think Triple H is a stellar booker. I mean, he gets a lot of shit, but I do think he knows how to book a card. And I think he knows the way to the future.
As a worker, Triple H was awful. And I'm not saying like he was awful because, you know, he didn't have good matches, because he actually did. He was awful because he didn't necessarily like the idea of putting people over, especially if they didn't think they were worth his time.
I think the only guy he put over was what, John Cena?
The only guys he put over were guys that were his friends. And even,
yeah,
you know, later on, like when he did the whole feud with Kevin Nash, he made sure Nash never went over.
Nash had no reason to go over.
Yeah.
He was past his prime.
Well, I'm talking
about Nash would do the same thing. Nash would do the same thing in Triple H's position, so.
Let me give you guys different eras of Paul Heyman. You tell me which one's your favorite. We talked about Dougie's first kind of memories, so we'll put that into a category. Dangerous Alliance, Paul Heyman. SmackDown kind of general manager, or the agent or whatever the fuck he was, Paul Heyman. The owner of ECW, Paul Heyman. And then now, the advocate for Brock Lesnar. Which era of Paul Heyman is the best? On screen.
Ooh. I would probably say the SmackDown one. Even when he was managing CM Punk about 10 years ago, I think he was pretty good too.
Well, would probably go into the advocate era, because, you know, he was the advocate for Brock Lesnar when he was managing Punk.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Okay.
That's true.
So, yeah, it's between SmackDown and that.
I would actually have to agree with that.
I mean, I would kind of agree with that, too, because it was kind of like the evolution of Paul Heyman. Because here you got this guy, when he started, you know, on screen, he started as, you know, at 21, 22 years old. You know, managing guys in Memphis and in the AWA in Florida. You know, he became the manager of the original Midnight Express, moved on to WCW, and then, you know, got into a feud with Jim Cornette, you know, managed guys there, then became a commentator. Then, you know, he evolved into the most hated heel manager, you know, when he became the manager of the Dangerous Alliance. And then he evolves there as the owner of ECW.
Exactly.
Does that for 7 years. Then he evolves into a Raw commentator because Jerry the King Lawler decided to take his wife's side and leave the WWF for a little while.
Yeah, I didn't like that one because he was kind of annoying on commentary. I was telling Daniel that
he had some good, you know, like one-liners every once in a while. Like when somebody was wrestling like Kane or especially if somebody was wrestling Kane, he goes, you know what their best course of action would be, JR? And JR would be like, what's that? He goes, run like hell.
What about his first night on TV when Vince had Trish stripped down and Heyman said, is this C-SPAN? Because we're going to see some bush. Go ahead, Doug.
Heyman is just, he's a guy, he's a very funny guy, but he's got like one of those senses of humor that like, when he gets worked up, it's real funny to listen to. If you remember a few weeks ago when R-Truth was in the ring with Brock Lesnar, and R-Truth said, I'm going to enter the Rumble and I'm going to throw you over the top rope, Paul Heyman. And Heyman just goes, Brock Lesnar's in the Rumble. He goes, oh, you're not in it? No, I'm not in it. What the? Because seeing
that
the vein funny. Pop out of Heyman's head.
Yeah.
I mean, shit like that's hysterical because he does have that sense of humor. And it gets really funny when he gets all worked up and shit.
Yeah.
Something. And by the way, that was fucking hilarious. I was watching that with you. Super funny. And I think R-Truth is an underrated talent himself. But
yeah.
We can't gloss over. Eric mentioned the SmackDown days. Paul Heyman gives himself a lot of credit for this, but not a lot of other people do. He kind of made SmackDown the A-show for a while. You know, before, I mean, I know they're trying to do that now on Fox, but they were beating Raw in ratings. And this was when Raw was Vince's baby. You know, he took over as the head writer, and he made SmackDown really good.
Yeah, that was around 2002, right?
2002, 2003... I think beginning of 2004, and then him and Stephanie got into it.
Yeah, or was it 2004 or 2005 that he kind of got sent away? Because he actually got sent to Ohio Valley Wrestling for a while, and that was in 2005 because he actually had to replace Jim Cornette.
Wow.
Yeah, that was... Well, he got relieved of his duties a couple times. And you know, that's something that's funny about Paul Heyman because if we talk about guys that go against the grain, rebels, you know, Paul Heyman's the biggest fucking rebel there is. He'll tell anybody to go fuck themselves. Him and Stephanie McMahon never got along, and it was known. And Vince had always built Stephanie. And Stephanie was always kind of head of creative a little bit, at least for a while there. And Paul Heyman did creative. He wrote the show for SmackDown. So those two butted heads a lot. So I believe, and you are right, Doug, he did get sent down to Ohio Valley Wrestling because they were getting into it then too. But I think he got relieved a couple times. I think once in 2003, or maybe the beginning of 2004, because I know for a while he was just an on-air talent. When he started doing the GM stuff.
I think in 2003 he got relieved for a little while because he was off TV for several months.
Yeah.
And then they brought him back. So I think what happened was he was getting into a lot of trouble because he would always have Michael Cole and Taz call SmackDown the A show and say that Raw was, you know, shit. You know, so to speak. And, you know, that would probably get Stephanie mad because, you know, who's on Raw? Triple H. Who's Triple H? The man putting his dick inside Stephanie. Or maybe Stephanie's putting her dick inside him. Who knows?
We can't do that, though, because she was also, I mean... I do get what you're saying, even though I think it's tremendously stupid. But you got to think that she is – a lot of the company's in her hands too. So Raw is their money. That's how they make really good money. That's how they get TV ratings.
Well, I'm saying that
a couple years before that, Raw was popping 10 million ratings, and Raw has always been their baby and one of their biggest sources for advertisers, sponsors. They love Raw. So when you're owned by WWE, SmackDown, you're working as a team. I see where Paul Heyman's coming from, but the fact that he's having people say, oh, fuck Raw, they want you to watch Raw too because it's all owned by the same company.
Exactly.
I don't think it's just going to be fucking Triple H. I get that,
but also I'm saying as like because, you know, you got to remember back around this time, Stephanie McMahon was still, you know, to a point, she was still a young, naive, you know, bratty little bitch who was doing her best to make sure that, you know, she was going to get the company, you know, once her father passed away or if he ever died. I have a feeling that we're unlucky enough to where Vince is going to live forever. But, like, you know.
What sources told you that Stephanie was doing that?
Huh?
Do you have any sources or evidence to back up these claims you're making? Or are you just talking shit? I just want to clarify for the listeners.
The only source I have is that I've heard Stephanie's a cunt.
Okay. I find it hilarious, so you can keep going as long as you want. I just don't want the listeners to think, oh, this is a serious thing. Stephanie's plotting behind her dad's back. When you're really just talking out of your ass.
If any of our listeners take anything I say seriously, then they just need to, you know, jump off a bridge right now.
Jesus Christ! We're getting canceled. Okay,
but
so...
No, I mean...
Yeah, yeah. What's up?
You're Mr. Savage today, Doug.
Huh?
I think you're Mr. Savage today.
Yeah.
He's Mr. Dumbass.
That's because some asshole texted me earlier and said said he couldn't do my order today, so I have to do it tomorrow.
You only had to do a small order.
Anyway, but like the thing is though, is that like back then, you know, kind of getting back to what I was saying earlier. Well, we'll kind of table that a little bit, but. Heyman wanted everybody to watch the show that he was writing, and Heyman just likes stirring up shit.
Understandable.
Which, you know, it makes for good TV. But, you know,
yeah.
to your point, though, Dan, with Stephanie McMahon, you know, she's a McMahon. You know, whether she wants to admit it or not, not too many people want to admit that they're related to Vince. So obviously she's going to get mad at somebody for dissing, you know, their top money making show, which was Raw. Because Raw was still technically decent at the time.
Well, I mean, I loved it back then. I know you weren't a huge fan because you're not a huge Triple H guy.
No, I'm not a huge Triple H guy, and well, Triple
H
didn't bother me. It was more so the overexposure of Triple H and the fact that, you know, he basically wore the world title as a chastity belt. You know, it was basically chained to his testicles, kind of, but not really.
Jesus Christ.
Metaphorically, it was.
Metaphorically. I love it.
He didn't want to get rid of it because he felt like him being champion was best for business.
That's fair.
And obviously, but, and that's the thing, because obviously, I mean, maybe it was, maybe it wasn't, but Paul Heyman was winning. So whatever Paul Heyman was doing, and that's why I think it caused further rift between him and Stephanie, because not only is he saying, fuck you, I'm going to do what I want to do, but he's also popping ratings. And he's also, you know, I mean, Kurt and Brock main evented WrestleMania that year. Not a lot of times has SmackDown main evented a WrestleMania. I mean, I know you guys are going to bring up a shit ton of times, but especially back then, it always felt like that was kind of reserved for the Raw guys. If you look at 2004, 2005, and I believe 2006.
And 2007. 2008, they gave it to Undertaker and Edge.
Yeah. So, I'm just saying for the time period, he was obviously doing something right. And he had great guys.
Yeah.
You know, people talk about the SmackDown 6 all the time. And that was kind of Paul Heyman's strategy, to have that SmackDown 6. Do you know who was on the SmackDown 6, Eric?
No, I don't remember.
$100 to all of them.
No, I don't remember.
That's all right. Rey Mysterio. Catch me if I'm wrong at some point, Doug. Rey Mysterio, Chris Benoit, Edge, Eddie Guerrero, Chavo Guerrero, I believe. And I'm missing somebody.
Kurt Angle? Or it's got to be either Kurt Angle or John Cena.
Possibly Kurt Angle, because I think this is before John Cena was blowing up. This is like 2002-ish. And that was his SmackDown.
Yeah, that was his point.
Yeah, that was his SmackDown. That's when he was more writing for it. That wasn't really his. I mean, he eventually did the agent stuff with Brock Lesnar, but he was more of a writer than an on-screen personality. But he really rose that show from dubs. And we saw how bad it got when he left. If you think of you want to see some bad wrestling, a lot of people will talk about, you know, 2001 WCW, 2000 WCW. Check out some 2005 SmackDowns when JBL was the champion. Ass cheeks.
Yeah, for a time, he was the longest reigning SmackDown champion of all time.
I have no fucking clue. But Doug, did you notice the dip in quality once Paul Heyman left that position?
I still kind of enjoyed SmackDown, you know, to a point, because there was guys on there that I liked.
Yeah, but I mean, like the Dicks and stuff like that, and like Rene Dupree and whatever the fuck his name is, winning the tag belts. There was some bad shit on there too. Yeah.
Well, no, there like some of it was okay. Other, you know, like I liked, you know, John Cena, obviously. You know, Rob Van Dam and Rey Mysterio as a tag team was kind of cool. Eddie Guerrero, obviously. You know, there are others. You know, back, I'd probably say that, like, it really kind of started to dip in 2006, too, because that's when, you know, like, ECW kind of became the third brand. And, you know, Taz left SmackDown to go call, you know, ECW with Joey Styles. So JBL kind of took over. And JBL, for like the first year, year and a half that he ever did commentary, I thought JBL was fucking horrible.
Really?
Yeah, I mean,
I think
he
eventually got better, though.
He eventually got better, but I would say probably about maybe the first 6 months to a year. Like, I think it was probably around like WrestleMania 23 when he started to become tolerable.
Yeah. Because then he came back to the ring for a little bit.
Yeah. After they realized how bad he was, so they're just like, all right, fuck it, go back to the ring.
Yeah.
Paul Heyman. But then you had, again, 2007 rolls around, and Batista was there, and Undertaker was there, and Edge was there. And, it was kind of tolerable again for a while. But, yeah, I'd probably say around 2006 is when it really dipped in quality. Even though there were some guys on there that I liked.
Would you contribute that to Paul Heyman not being there?
I would.
Okay. That's all I was asking.
I would agree with that. Hello?
All right, so I guess everyone just didn't feel like fucking talking anymore, which is one of the things we said we would stop doing. Is there a facet of his career that you want to get into? Because there's so many things we can get into. So, you guys, what are some things you want to talk about with Paul Heyman?
Well, we talked earlier on, we got into the Dangerous Alliance a little bit. And, that was a good part of his career. But also, kind of the beginning when he was, in Memphis. Or kind of in Memphis, he was with, led a Dangerous Alliance in there, and it was mainly, Tommy Rich and Austin Idol, and they were feuding with Jerry Lawler, and it was going to,
I know this story.
Yeah, it was going to culminate in a, scaffold match. And they sold the place out because their main objective was going to be, okay, we're going to get Heyman off the scaffold and we're going to throw his ass off. And that's what everybody wanted to see, right? So then he comes up to Jerry Lawler the night of the show and says, I can't go on the scaffold. Lawler goes, what are you talking about? The place is sold out. People paid to see you get thrown off the scaffold. Why can't you go off there? He goes, oh, I'm afraid of heights. So then, 3 days later, Lawler held his temper for 3 days, and then Heyman said something else. So Lawler just finally had enough and punched him in the face and broke his jaw.
Wow.
They don't like each other too, though.
Yeah, I was gonna say there's a history between those two, isn't there?
Yeah, well, it started with this, and then they had the issue. Jerry Lawler, just like a lot of the old school guys, Jerry Lawler was not a fan of ECW. And like I said, a lot of the old school guys weren't. Jim Cornette hated it, and Ric Flair wasn't a fan of it. Probably among others. I actually don't think Hogan liked it either. Bischoff didn't like it, but liked their talent, so he stole most of their talent. I'll take that back. It's not considered stealing when you're actually paying the talent to come work for you.
Yeah, very true.
Okay, Heyman was paying his guys in hot dogs and donuts or whatever kind of food he was offering them.
And that's just Bubba Dudley.
Yeah, and so, and here's the thing, and this is where, Heyman bitches about all the talent that was stolen from ECW. Well, if you fucking pay them, they won't go.
Yeah, but he can't compete with a Vince McMahon or an Eric Bischoff on money.
And that's the issue. Is that I know ECW wasn't necessarily about making money. It was more about, like, you know, satisfying your fans and, you know, giving the fans what they wanted. But at the end of the day, wrestling is a business. And in a business, you want to make money.
Absolutely.
Because a guy, these wrestlers cannot pay rent by having their girlfriends or their wives blow their landlords. Landlord just can't knock on the door and then the guy opens up. I'm just going to use this as an example. I'm not trying to spread any rumors or anything. Guy just can't knock on the apartment door. RVD can't just open up the door and say, oh, what can I do for you, mister, whatever. And the guy pulls his pants down and says, it's time for the rent to be due. Okay, Sonya, come on over here and blow this guy so we can have the rent caught up.
Of course, out of all the divas, you picked a lesbian.
No, Sonya was the name of RVD's wife for 20 years.
Wait, who did she blow? What the fuck are we talking about?
He's giving an example.
My point is basically that these wrestlers have to make money in order to pay rent or whatever, or pay their bills. They can't just have their wives or girlfriends blow somebody, and that's how your bills are paid.
What kind of porn have you been watching, Doug? Because that got way too vivid in detail. But
oh, that was fun.
Paul
okay,
Urban
moving on.
Is not known as a money guy. I agree with Doug on that. He's fucked over numerous people. And it's weird because for a time it felt like it was cool to hate Paul Heyman. Like, a lot of people in the business don't like Paul Heyman. We were talking about Jerry Lawler earlier, right, guys?
Yeah.
I remember watching an interview with Michael Landsberg. You remember they used to do Off the Record with the WWE guys?
Yeah.
So Heyman was on there, and they did a word association, and they said Jerry Lawler. And he didn't, you know, you talk about how much heat they have. He didn't talk about the scaffold thing. He didn't talk about ECW. He brought up the announcing thing, and he said, of course he doesn't like me. I took his job and was better at it than him as a color commentating with JR. So that heat, you know, is involved with a lot of different things. Even Heyman and Punk making fun of Jerry Lawler's heart attack. I just don't think the two guys don't get along very well.
No.
No, they don't. And Heyman had that issue with a lot of people. And, I mean, he had that issue with a lot of old school guys. I mean, him and Cornette, you know, for a while they were... You know, for a while, him and Cornette got along, and then they had a falling out, I think, in, like, 94. And, you know, that's when Heyman went on Cornette's shit list. You know, just like everybody else has. Just like if he ever listens to this show, Daniel's going to go on Cornette's shit list.
If we ever did a retrospective on him. That would be interesting.
I would rather run through a dog field with peanut butter on my nuts.
I was going to say, would you skip out on that show, Daniel? I think Jim Cornette was actually close in the vote, so.
Yeah, which scared the shit out of Daniel.
I'd rather do an episode on Nyla Rose. I'd rather do an episode on Beaver Cleavage.
Oh, God. But, like, you know, kind of getting back to it, though, you know, like I said, Cornette and Heyman had issue. And it's basically because Heyman has, you know, like Daniel, you said earlier, Heyman's known for screwing people over. But, you know, when he screwed a lot of people over in ECW, a lot of people just kind of laugh at it because Heyman's one of those guys. Heyman's not vindictive when he screws you over. Heyman is like, he's the nicest guy in the world. He'll pat you on the back while taking the wallet out of your back pocket.
Yeah, he's sneaky.
All right. So, it's just like, I was going to use another analogy, but I think I've already gone too far tonight, so I'm not going to use the analogy I was thinking of.
No,
you can do it for Sunday.
Dan, did you just say do it?
Do it. Fuck it.
I was going to say...
We're unscripted.
Yeah. I was going to say, he'll steal your watch while he's fingering your ass.
What the fuck? I regret my decision telling you to do that.
I told you.
You know,
I told
Paul
you
Heyman's
he was savage
network.
Tonight. And Doug
he's
didn't even work tonight.
He's a
tonight.
Fucking idiot.
Huh?
I said
you were savage tonight.
Oh, fucking idiot. Paul Heyman's net worth is $10 million.
Right now?
Yes.
Holy shit.
Now let's look up Mikey Whipwreck's net worth. One of the big talents for ECW.
What's our net worth?
Probably $1.50 fucking cents.
Right.
Guys,
my phone keeps blowing up with text messages, so I'm going to check them real quick. I'm going to hang up, and then I'm going to call back in about 2 minutes.
Okay.
I'll be back.
All right.
Eric, this can't be right. It says Mikey Whipwreck's net worth is $31 million.
Seriously?
Yeah, that can't be right. No fucking way.
He's making more than some NBA players? Or...
I guess.
Wow.
Yeah. But Paul Heyman, he's a legend. He's done a lot for the business of pro wrestling. I think, you know, his mark, we talk about like Bischoff's mark on wrestling, right? With cruiserweights and stuff like that. Heyman brought cruiserweights into the U.S., basically. He brought the Lucha Libre style. They did that on ECW.
Wow.
He brought
yeah.
in Rey Mysterio, Psychosis. He brought in Dean Malenko and Chris Benoit, Eddie Guerrero. He brought these talents.
Here comes Doug.
On kind of...
Exactly. Welcome back,
I'm back. Thanks.
Are you going to... Oh, never mind.
You don't need to know
okay.
who was texting me.
Oh, boy. Somebody from work?
Yeah.
Okay.
I guess it rhymes with blow.
Actually, no. I'm just not going to say the person's name because then you'll start on me.
I know who it is.
Who is it?
I'm not saying the person's name.
Does it rhyme with
Benjamin? Yeah.
Maybe.
Does she have a night? Never mind. So Paul Heyman,
don't do it. She
yeah, we're
live. She's waiting for Eric and I to send her links to the show so she can listen to it. So don't do anything stupid.
yeah, don't do
Sorry.
This episode.
Anyway.
She's got a nice ass, though. But as we move on, if we, as we move on in the Paul Heyman episode, what's more you want to talk about with Heyman? The ECW revival? What could have been done to make that go better, Doug?
If it wasn't a WWE production.
Exactly. Did you watch the video
else?
I sent you, Daniel?
I've seen it 3 months ago when it first came out.
Okay. Let's talk about that, actually.
Okay, let's
talk about that. There was a lot of interesting stuff that came out of that from mainly Tommy Dreamer and Heyman and Sandman.
Well, I never knew Shane McMahon was so heavily involved.
Yeah, I didn't know that either. That's interesting. And this is what I was thinking earlier, because they named it the third brand, which is NXT now. If WWE Network was a thing 15 years ago, or no, 12 years ago, whenever it started, 14 years ago, you think ECW would have been on the network like it is with NXT? Or
no?
Because
actually,
Tommy Dreamer was saying the best thing they should have done was put it online and do a streaming service. That was Shane's idea. I kind of agree with that.
Yeah.
Because they and it, as in they would have brought back the old ECW, and I think it would have succeeded for a little bit more than it actually did.
Right, and they wanted to keep it on .com, you know, like they did with Heat and Velocity at that time, because they were just mainly .com shows.
Yeah, and the main event later on the network. Is that still on, the main event?
What, main event?
Yeah, the relaunch of main event. They used to.
Yeah, it's still there.
Oh, wow.
But it's on like a 30-day delay from the network.
Oh.
Well, wow. Because it airs on Sky Sports.
Oh, okay. That's interesting.
Yeah, they got some good action on there.
Anyway, did you watch that episode, Untold, Doug?
Yeah. I watched it when it was on the network.
Yeah, I just saw it on YouTube today. So I just watched it so I can get some notes on it. Yeah, I found it interesting that Shane, with the innovator of the brains of the operation to bring it back. And, of course, Vince, evil maniac he is, wanted to take it over.
Well, yeah, because Vince, again, when you're the head of a company like WWE, you want to be in control of everything.
Yeah, I understand that. Let's just hope he didn't take full control of SFL and let Oliver Luck take control of that. But that's not here or there.
It is here and there.
It is, yeah. But
I think it's kind of hard to do a Paul Heyman episode because there's so much to talk about. But
I know.
What do you think, out of all this stuff you heard, what's the most fucked up thing you've ever seen him do, Doug? Or hear him do? Maybe how he treated a talent, or...
The most fucked up thing I've ever seen him do...
It's
I think the thing that bothered me the most that he did when he was when he made fun of King's heart attack.
Yeah, that was messed up.
You think so? You think that's the worst?
Well, I can't really, Dan, I really can't think of anything else because of, like, everything else is basically just, like, you know, him being in character. I know, like, the whole thing with, like, I know, like, one of the more asshole things that he did, but that's just, you know, his character was when he fucked over RVD in the ECW arena when RVD had to be suspended for the whole drug thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. I can just think of so many times that he kind of fucked over talent. You kind of, I mean, everyone's got a story about Paul Heyman fucking him over for money. And the, he's known for the bounce checks. But I think he was kind of a struggling businessman and he did what he had to do.
I don't know if we can necessarily fault him for all that because, again, ECW was basically produced out of somebody's basement.
His mother's basement.
Was it his mother's or was it somebody else's?
I think it was, who, Paul Heyman?
Yeah.
He lived with his parents. He always did.
Well, no, because wasn't it produced out of... It was produced out of some other guy's basement, like Ron Buffone or whatever the hell his name is.
Oh wow!
Really?
It was really produced out of a basement? I thought you guys were just being sarcastic. Wow.
No.
I thought I heard Tommy Dreamer said they used to do stuff in. Heyman's parents' basement. Maybe.
No, I'm pretty sure it was another guy.
Okay. Well, either way, that's still impressive to get all that done, basically. He's a mastermind. He knows what he's talking about. Well, who do you think's smarter in professional wrestling, Paul Heyman or Jim Ross?
Oh, that's a good one. I have another
one.
Who
would you rather have by your side if you were running a company?
Are we talking about
probably
now, JR?
Jim Ross,
because
I know I could trust him.
I have to agree with Doug.
Who, JR?
Yeah.
Now, here's another one.
Okay.
Bischoff or Paul Heyman?
Paul Heyman, any day of the week.
Doug?
See, I think Bischoff. Go ahead, Doug.
Well, I'm gonna pose another question to you guys, but I'm gonna answer Eric's first.
I'd like to answer it too.
Okay. But I'm gonna say Heyman. Well, it really depends though, on the thing. Like business wise. I think you would want to say Bischoff because Bischoff was a better businessman, I think, and he knew how to cut costs.
Yeah.
That's exactly
okay.
The same point I was going to make. I think Bischoff's better with money.
Yeah, Bischoff's better with money, but Heyman, I think, is better with ideas.
Yeah, he's more of a creative guy.
I think they would have made a good business. They could have been a good business partners if one had the brains, one had the it's good with money. So that would have been
interesting. If they didn't fucking hate each other.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, let me ask you guys this. If you're starting up a company and you have to have like a committee, like a creative team almost, right? And
yeah.
You had to have four guys. You had four positions open on your creative team, and you had, let's say, about and you had the following guys available or that were interviewing for the positions. You had four you had to fill, and you're interviewing Bruce Prichard, Eric Bischoff, Paul Heyman, Jim Cornette, Jim Ross, Vince Russo, Jeff Jarrett, Jeff Jarrett and Dutch Mantel. Which four do you hire? Your odds again. Huh?
I know Dusty's not alive, but would you put Dusty in there too?
If he were alive, yeah.
What was the initial question, Doug? If I'm running a company, or
if you're running a company and you have to have a creative team, and four spots are available on your creative team, and you're interviewing, and these eight guys were up for the interview. Those eight guys being Bruce Prichard. Did I say Bischoff at first?
I don't think so.
Bruce Prichard, Eric Bischoff, Jim Cornette, Paul Heyman, Jim Ross, Vince Russo, Jeff Jarrett, and Dutch Mantel.
You want to go first, Daniel?
Yeah, I'll go first. If it's a creative team, see, I would have Bischoff in to kind of help with money or whatever, and maybe help produce. But if I'm going creative team, I'm going Cornette, Jim Ross, Paul Heyman, and Dutch Mantel. I think that would get the best product on the screen.
I'll go Bischoff for your reason, same reason. I go Heyman. I go Jim Ross. And I go, who were other ones? Cornette. No, I mean Jim Ross. I said Jim Ross, Eric Bischoff, Paul Heyman, and Jim Cornette.
Okay. I would basically go along those same lines, except for I would take Mantel out, I would take Cornette out and put Dutch Mantel. Because
you wouldn't
Dutch
have Cornette on your creative team.
Because he would probably argue with everybody.
Yeah, but he's smart. He knows what he's talking about.
He knows what he's talking about, but like as far as like the current product goes, he doesn't like any of it.
Yeah. That's true.
Very true. Have you ever said anything positive about the current product ever?
He likes the Revival.
That's about
That's
it.
That's interesting. Do you have any other questions that we can answer, Daniel?
Paul Heyman, and we're getting towards the end here, I'm thinking, because we're kind of running out of stuff. I like this new format. I don't know if we're going to do it every time, but I kind of like just talking.
Yeah, I like it. Especially because there's only the three of us.
Yeah, we can always go back to our regular career perspectives, too. It's just trying something out. But
exactly.
All right, so my final question. Oh, God. If Paul Heyman had an unlimited source of money right now, and he started his own wrestling company, do you think he could make it work and compete? that he's ready everything.
No.
Doug? That's kind of tough. I mean, right now, there's so much good wrestling on right now. Well, I don't even know if I would say good wrestling, but there's so much wrestling on right now that, and I know a lot of it, like, people can't see, like, Ring of Honor is just kind of hanging on by a thread.
Yeah.
Yeah, it just is. Yeah.
Now, here's the thing. If Heyman had an unlimited source of money and bought Ring of Honor, I think he could make that succeed because he'd probably be able to, you know, make sure that some of those guys wouldn't be leaving.
Yeah.
I think if he had an unlimited source of money and bought a company that's already in existence, yeah, he could make it work.
Yeah, not startup.
Yeah. And he's even talked about, he was thinking about it when he first left WWE in like 2006 or whatever. He was talking about how he was thinking of doing a Ring of Honor with Seth Rollins and Dean Ambrose and people like that.
Wow.
But he never got into it. Yeah, he's talked about that. All right, so final thoughts on Paul Heyman. Dougie, you go first. I know Paul Heyman, you're a big fan.
Heyman's one of those guys that he's a genius. But unfortunately, you know, even though he's a genius, he's not necessarily – he's a creative genius. He just wasn't a financial genius.
Yeah.
And that was, you know, the issue.
He had half a brain of the wrestling business.
Right. Right, exactly. And you needed to have, and that's the issue. But if you really look at what ECW was able to accomplish, ECW started in, I mean, by all rights, ECW started in 92. All right.
Well, that's it, about 8 years.
Yeah, but in 93 is when it really, you know, kind of gained the attention because that's when they got the TV deal and all that. And that's when Heyman took over. If you look at other companies that really started around that time, you know, the Global Wrestling Federation, which was, you know, in Dallas. It was to replace, World Class Championship Wrestling. You know, the Global Wrestling Federation in Dallas, the Universal Wrestling Federation, you know, by Herb Abrams, Jim Cornette's Smoky Mountain Wrestling. Those
New
companies
Japan?
Were lucky to last, huh?
Did New Japan start then, or were they been
No, New Japan had been a thing, I think, since like the 80s.
Okay.
But my point is that like those companies that started up around the time, you know, in that same time period, or in that same time frame, they were lucky to last 3 years. ECW went 7.
Yeah.
And those guys were way worse with, I mean, Cornette was okay with money, but you know, Herb Abrams and the people in Dallas, they were way worse with money than Heyman was.
Oh yeah.
All right. And
yeah.
I mean, cause that's the thing. And so Heyman, you know, he gets a lot of shit, but there were guys that did worse.
Way worse.
Yeah.
Let me pose this one last question. If Paul Heyman and Eric Bischoff got together and form a wrestling company, ECW and WCW, do you think they would succeeded? instead of
Vince
buying them.
I mean, if there would have been a working relationship?
Yeah, if Vince didn't buy them and they decided to work together because they knew they were both crashing and they decided to work together to form one huge company with all these wrestlers, you think they would have succeeded?
No.
No?
I mean, that's a loaded question, though, because I think listen, all ECW's guys went to fucking WCW anyway. So if you just have that and then ECW just goes away and Paul Heyman writing creative and he has the book, I think WCW might actually last a couple more years. Because I think he would have done, especially with those big guys, and he knows how to get guys like Raven and Sandman over because he's already done it. So I actually do think that maybe they're probably not win, but I think they would have lasted a little longer if they got along.
Now to follow that up, if they did that, you think TNA would have been around? You think Jeff Jarrett would join forces with them? And TNA wouldn't have been around.
Well, we're getting into conspiracy theories now because there's no way that would have happened.
Yeah, I know. just a question.
Okay,
back in
1984, when Vince started kind of really taking over and, started taking over the wrestling world and bought out a lot of the smaller regional territories, there was a group of promoters. It was the Gagnas, the Crockett's, and I believe the people in Memphis. And Fritz. They formed a little group called Pro Wrestling USA. And basically it was a talent trade. Because they wanted to gang up, they wanted to beat Vince McMahon.
Yeah.
You know why Pro Wrestling USA didn't? It actually did last a couple of years. But you know why it didn't last longer?
Why?
Because the other promoters were trying to sign away everybody else's talents.
Oh, wow.
You would have, Kurt Hennig, who was an AWA talent around this time, he'd be sitting in the locker room getting changed. Jerry Jarrett would come up to him and be like, hey, you want to come work in Memphis full time? Screw these AWA guys. We want you in Memphis. Or Greg Gagne, even though he claims to be innocent in this whole thing, which is actually bullshit. Greg Gagne would go up to Ric Flair and be like, hey, Rick, you and I have known each other for years. We actually went to college together. Why don't you say fuck it to the Crockett's and why don't you come work for us? Or some bullshit like that. Promoters can't trust each other. Promoters and people in power cannot trust one another. Heyman and Bischoff wouldn't be able to work together. The only person that I think Heyman would actually be able to work with, and that's just because neither one of them, they can't be really trusted by anybody else. And if they fuck each other over, it would be turned into a storyline. It would be like if Heyman and Vince Russo got together.
Ooh. That would have been.
I think that'd be too crazy.
That would have been interesting, to say the least.
What would have ended up happening, especially around like that time, like 99, 2000, whatever it may be, was if those two got together. Then you'd have a match. You'd have Mike Awesome defending the ECW title against the Naked Sable, and Awesome would be powerbombing Sable on top of a table filled with fucking thumbtacks or some shit.
Oh, son of a bitch.
What?
What?
On SmackDown, Roman and John Morrison are facing, so I'm about to get one fucking point.
I thought it was supposed to be a tag.
It is.
Okay.
Speaking of that, do you want to update folks on that? Who's winning?
No, because the book's down here and I can't read Doug's handwriting. So we'll brief him on Sunday.
Sunday, okay. Yeah, Sunday starts a new week, so yeah, that makes sense too.
But we'll go over it on the Wednesday Night Wars podcast. We'll go over the scores and shit.
Okay. So we'll go over AEW.
Yes, we will do all that, Eric. Anything you want. Anything you want to go over, we'll go over.
Okay.
But
what time,
do you have final thoughts? Jesus Christ. Do you have final thoughts on Paul Heyman, Eric?
Great manager. One of the best. Maybe not top five, but top 10. And he's a great talker. Very entertaining.
I would agree. My final thoughts would probably be genius, brilliant, rebel, of great voice to have in professional wrestling. And so someone who really knows what they're doing. All right, guys. You got anything else to say, or you want to pick it up Sunday? Good episode?
Yep. It was a good episode.
Yeah.
Doug, do you have any final thoughts?
It was a good episode. It was a good episode. We'll talk to everybody on Sunday when we do the Wednesday Night Wars podcast. Remember, next week we're going to be doing a watch-along of the February 23rd, 1990 episode of the main event, which was a WWF primetime special. And it was one of my, actually it would probably almost be, if not my first memory, one of my first memories, as a fan growing up. One that I can really, kind of recall that I actually paid attention to.
Okay.
Right.
It'll be my first time watching it, so it should be fun.
Yeah, and Daniel, I think you've watched it like once or twice.
Yeah, I'm excited to watch it live, but I think I might have seen it once before.
Yeah, because, and again, that's going to be a lot to get into, but it's going to be really fun. It's going to be really fun watching it. Well, for me, it's always fun watching it. Because, again, I absolutely love this. And, to me, there's sentimental value.
Exactly.
Not because it's the day after Mindy was born. That's the only downside. But notice how Daniel just stays silent. He doesn't want to go to hell.
No, I don't want her to fucking rip my head off.
She's still your sister, Doug.
Yeah, I know. Keep rubbing that in my face.
All right, guys, I'll see you next week.
We're already going to hell because what we said yesterday. But we're not going to get into that.
Yeah.
Doug knows what I'm talking about.
The baby oil and the chocolate sauce didn't help either.
All right, I'm hanging up.
We did yesterday at work. Okay. Thanks, Daniel. Bye, Doug.
See you, Eric.
Man. Bye, everybody.